translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O King Yudhishthir, the demigods, many great sages and saints, including even the four sons of Lord Brahma, and I myself were present at your Rajasuya sacrificial ceremony. But when there was a question of who should be the first person worshipped, everyone decided upon Lord Krishna, the Supreme Person. Purport. This is a reference to the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhishthir. In that meeting, there was a great turmoil over selecting the best person to be worshipped first. Everyone decided to worship Sri Krishna. The only protest came from Shishupal, and because of his vehement opposition, he was killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This verse is really an illustration to the previous verse spoken by Narad Muni to King Yudhishthir. So to connect the dots, we'll read the previous verse as well. Previous verse was a principle Narad Muni established, and the today's verse is an illustration to that principle. So previous verse 34 says, O King of the earth, it has been decided by expert, learned scholars, that only the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, in whom all that is moving or non-moving within this universe is resting, and from whom everything is coming, is the best person to whom everything must be given. And today's verse again, O King Yudhishthir, the demigods, many great sages and saints, including even the four sons of Lord Brahma, and I myself were present at your Rajasuya sacrificial ceremony. But when there was a question of who should be the first person worshipped, everyone decided upon Lord Krishna, the Supreme Person. Narad Muni is referring to the description which opened the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, how Lord Sri Krishna named in this verse Achyuta, which means sinless one. The word Achyuta has many meanings. Firm, irresistible, sinless. In general, we can say it refers to a perfect personality. And so definitely Krishna is perfect personality. And if you remember, seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam started with that amazing description which is elaborated upon in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, how Rajasuya Yagya of Maharaj Yudhishthir was performed, and there was a question, who should be the first person to respect and worship, which is called Agra Puja. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Shri Shri Gaunitai Ki Jai. And there was some discussion, as acharyas mentioned, not everyone in the assembly were pure devotees. There were some ritualistic brahmanas who didn't exactly understood Krishna's position, and because there were many exalted personalities present in that assembly, including Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Indra, as well as many, many sages such as Vyasadev, and as mentioned in this verse, four Kumaras. So, and because those brahmanas, they were not conversant with Krishna's true position, they were thinking, oh, maybe there are some other personalities are deserving the first worship. And there was a discussion amongst them, and of course, pure Krishna's devotees who were present in the assembly, including Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, they all knew exactly the position of Krishna, and Srila Vyasadeva, of course. They were just waiting until the, you know, debate is over. They could easily interrupt and tell these brahmanas to keep quiet and tell the truth. But as acharyas are mentioning, they were thinking, well, there is a Sahadev present here, and he is an eloquent speaker, and will wait. If he will speak, and if he will establish Lord Krishna's position, that's all well and good. If he will, for some reason, not speak, then we will step in. So that was the position. And then, surely enough, Sahadev stood up and spoke. Very nicely, he said, no. Krishna should be offered the first worship. And he gave many reasons. He said, he is the Supreme Lord. He is the master of all. He is the most perfect personality. Everything emanates from him. Everything depends on him. And if we worship him, we will worship everybody. Exactly as the previous purport, Srila Prabhupada's purport, mentioning that famous verse from the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Yathataror Mula Nishachanana Tripyanti Tatskanda Bhuja Pashakham Pranopaharachya Trindriyanam Tathaiva Sarvarhanam Achyutejya. That in the same way as watering the root of the tree nourishes the entire tree, and in the same way as food put into the stomach nourishes the entire body, so worshipping the Supreme Lord, Ijya, and Supreme Lord is also called Achyuta, as mentioned here in this verse. So in the same way, everyone will become pleased and satisfied if the Supreme Lord is worshipped. And this particular verse starts with the word Devarshi, Deva, Rishi, and we cannot help but remember another famous verse which Srila Prabhupada often quoted, also spoken by Srila Narada Muni from 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Devarshi bhutaptam rinam pitrinam nakin karunayam rinicharanjan sarvatmanaya sharanam sharanyam gatom hukunda parihitya kartam, which says that one who is worshipping Krishna, the Supreme Lord, doesn't have to worship anybody else. And in fact, all his debts to everyone, all the devas, all the demigods, all the rishis, sages, all the buddhas, other living entities, pitris, ancestors, forefathers, and nrinam, other human beings, are already fulfilled, already paid. Someone who is worshipping the Supreme Lord doesn't have to worship or serve anyone else. And so Sahadev spoke like that, and everyone was in ecstasy. And Maharaj Yudhishthir was just waiting for that, and so immediately he approached the Supreme Lord and washed his feet and then sprinkled Charanamrita on his head and on the heads of others. And then Krishna was given many valuable gifts. This was very simple procedure of worship. Wash the feet and give many nice gifts. we can see that is emulated also in worshiping spiritual master. Two main major elements. And then Krishna was given many clothes, especially yellow silken cloth. We know that Krishna is very fond of yellow silk. His dhoti is also always yellow. And many ornaments and jewels. And everyone was happy except one man, Shishupal. Because he was inimical towards Krishna since his birth. He always hated Krishna. And especially after the last episode, when Krishna destroyed his opportunity to marry Rukmini, as Shishupal thought. Krishna stole Rukmini from him. So Shishupal, you know, Shishupal's envy and jealousy towards Krishna increased manifold. And he stood up and he spoke. Actually, he wanted to speak from the start, when Krishna was glorified. But he was waiting. You know, Kshatriyas, they always calculating when is the best opportunity to destroy the enemy. And so Shishupal's calculation was, you know, I want to destroy this whole function of Rajasuya. By defaming Krishna, I will speak about, you know, I will criticize Krishna openly. And in this way, he was thinking, everyone will understand that Krishna was not worthy of worship. And because everyone made this silly mistake of worshiping Krishna first, the whole Rajasuya sacrifice will be spoiled. And so, you know, I will not only get at Krishna, but I will also get at all his, you know, allies or his devotees. And so he spoke. And so he spoke many unpalatable things against Krishna. He criticized Krishna. he said, this Krishna, nobody knows which caste he belongs to. You know, he was born as Vaishya. Now he is posing himself as Kshatriya. And he is preaching as a Brahmana. So who he is, nobody knows. And of course, Acharyas are saying that Shishupal, indirectly, he was glorifying Krishna because, yes, it is true that Krishna does not belong to any caste. He is above all. And Shishupal also said, this Krishna, you know, his qualities are unspeakable. And Sridhar Swami says, yes. Krishna's qualities are so exalted that no one can glorify them enough. Of course, Shishupal was meaning different things, but, you know, by Yogamaya, he was influenced to glorify Krishna like that. And anyway, he was trying to find so many faults in Krishna, and guess how many faults he found? He found how many faults in faultless Supreme Lord? 100. And Krishna was waiting. Probably he was keeping his count. How many faults Shishupal will find. Because it is mentioned in Mahabharata that the Supreme Lord knew that Shishupal is so jealous and envious of him. And he could kill him long time back. But Shishupal's mother approached Krishna and she said, I know that Shishupal is a very bad boy. And he's, you know, saying and so many bad things about you. But please spare him. Only if he will, you know, go overboard. Only if he will blaspheme you 100 times in one go. Then you can kill him. And Krishna said, okay, I'll do that. And then during this sacrifice, Shishupal was blaspheming Krishna, you know, bringing up one criticism after another, one after another, and then actually it says that when Shishupal was blaspheming Krishna, Krishna didn't worry about it because Krishna is not moved by so-called criticism. He's not like one of the conditioned souls who become agitated or disturbed upon being criticized. Krishna didn't worry so much. But then the whole situation was becoming very heated because there were so many devotees. They loved Krishna and they just wanted to shred Shishupal to pieces for so many offenses. And it's mentioned actually that no one should tolerate the blasphemy of the Supreme Lord or his devotees. No good person should ever tolerate that. And surely enough, so many people stood up, especially Pandavas, of course. They were just, ready with their weapons. They just wanted to, dismantle Shishupala. But Krishna realized. And then Shishupala was also getting at them. He was blaspheming them as well, which was not something Krishna wanted to tolerate. And Krishna realized, if I don't stop that guy, his creativity knows no limits. He's ready to criticize me and Vaishnavas unlimitedly, so better I stop him before it's too late, before there is a bloodshed, because the whole ceremony will be spoiled. And then Krishna took out his Sudarshan Chakra and threw it at Shishupal, which is very nicely cut his head off the trunk, and that was it for Shishupal. And then the ceremony continued. But then the immortal soul of Shishupal, and this is very amazing description actually in Bhagavatam, it says that everyone present saw the soul of Shishupal coming out of his body and entering into Krishna's body. Right? And the description is given as if it is something normal to see the soul coming out of the body. But surely enough, that the devotees who were present there, if they could see Krishna as he is, as the Supreme Lord, surely they could see the soul. So they were all so self-realized, they could see Shishupala's soul coming out of the body and entering into Krishna. And then, of course, they realized that Shishupal became liberated. For what? For blaspheming Krishna? And of course, Maharaj Yudhishthira was very perturbed by the circumstances, and he addressed nearby Narad Muni. He said, "Narad Muni, what's going on? Can you please explain me? How come that Shishupal, such a blasphemer, got liberated?" And of course, Narad Muni started the whole description in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. If you remember, the first chapter is entitled "The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone." And then he explains Shishupal's position and narrates the story of Hiranyakashipu, because from what I understand, this was the same personality in different births. So Shishupal and Dantavakra, they were Jai and Vijay from Vaikuntha. The description which is given in third and seventh cantos as well, how they fell down because of the offense towards four Kumaras. And their first birth was Ravana and Kumbhakarna. Sorry, their first birth was Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, then Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and then their last births were Shishupala and Dantavakra. And it says that they pleased the Supreme Lord so much by their fighting with him that he granted them special benediction to take birth again in his pastimes as Jagai and Madai. And they got even promotion, as it is explained, that they were just gatekeepers at Vaikuntha, but by Lord Chaitanya's mercy they went to Goloka Vrindavan. So that was, as Bhakti Charu Maharaj says, this was the Shastric proof of changing one's original Swarupa. By Lord Chaitanya's mercy, one can even change his Swarupa, original position. So, this is a very instructive story, of course, and basically, why Shishupal could achieve such perfection, even though he was blaspheming the Supreme Lord, it is explained that because he was always focused on the Supreme Lord, and he was chanting his holy names, even though in blasphemous way. He was always talking about Krishna. He was thinking about Krishna, and he was chanting Krishna's holy names. And in this way, he became purified. He was focused on Krishna, even though his focus was unfavorable, pratikul. But still, he was focused on Krishna. And Krishna is called Apapa Vidham, the one, literal meaning is the one whom the sins cannot touch. But Srila Prabhupada gives a very interesting translation. He says Krishna is antiseptic. Antiseptic means that anyone who comes in touch with Krishna, he becomes purified. Not only that Krishna can never be contaminated, but anyone who comes in touch with Krishna becomes purified. And Srila Prabhupada gives an example of the sun, which can purify, which can distill pure water even from urine. So Shishupal, even though he was so conditioned and so hateful of Krishna, but by constantly chanting Krishna's names and Krishna's glories and constantly thinking about Krishna, he became purified and he achieved liberation, something which what yogis trying for and spending thousands of years in meditation. So Shishupal could achieve in a few years just by blaspheming Krishna. So, and therefore Narad Muni explains that anyone who is focused on Krishna, no matter what the motivation is, that person will become liberated, purified, and will go back to Krishna eventually. So the question we may raise, maybe we should adopt that mode, become inimical towards Krishna and hateful towards Krishna, and then we will become very quickly liberated. Well, it is not recommended, because if we look at the examples of those demons who did that, we can see that their lives were completely miserable. Even though they became liberated at the end, but they went through hell on earth because they, you know, maintain such a negative attitude towards Krishna. So, you know, we might as well choose which mode we prefer. Do we prefer to chant, dance, and feast and be happy in this lifetime in Krishna consciousness and at the end go back home, back to Godhead, or spend whole life in complete misery and then get liberation? And even that is not guaranteed, whether our liberation will be personal or impersonal. So that's why it is not recommended. Negative attitude towards Krishna is not recommended. But in any case, these pastimes, they explain to us that no matter who comes in touch with Krishna, these people, they become liberated, they become purified. Because Krishna is an absolute good for everyone. And it's not that it was happening before. We can see these descriptions only in Bhagavatam. It is always happening. And there are so many instances, there are so many proofs from even modern ISKCON history how people do become purified by coming in touch with Krishna. Even the inimical people, like in Russia, there was one case when KGB sent one agent to spy after devotees, and he was given a task to infiltrate into ashram and report on all the activities of the devotees every, you know, whatever, regularly. And so I actually know this case because I witnessed that. I came with one visiting Prabhupada disciple to that temple. And temple president came to that Prabhupada disciple who was GBC. And he said, we have very peculiar case. There is one devotee who is your aspiring disciple. And he wants to get initiated. But this is his story. He was a KGB agent sent in, you know, planted into our community to spy after us. But after some time, he regretted. And he said, you know, I realized that I don't want to be KGB agent anymore. I just want to be devotee. I give up. I like Krishna. I like devotees. So KGB lost one of the agents, but actually quite a few. We don't even know how many. And there were so many cases. And another case that was a little bit earlier in the end of 80s, well, mid-80s, towards the end of 80s, when devotees were heavily prosecuted. And that was in Georgia, which is also part of CIS, and in the town Suhumi, there was quite a strong group of devotees, and most of them were arrested and imprisoned for their practice of Krishna consciousness. And their case was dealt with by the high court judge of the city. And, you know, he had to deal with quite a large group of people. There were maybe 15 or 20 devotees on the trial. And so he had so much work to do that he was taking materials home, which were including, you know, all the evidences, including Prabhupada books, etc. And so he was, you know, studying all these materials at home as well as at work. And his son was a solicitor. And he was wondering what is the case his father is dealing with. And so he was looking at the documents and started reading Prabhupada's books. And then he wanted to know more, so he met with devotees. Devotees preached to him. And as a result, he took up Krishna consciousness. And he became a devotee and started chanting and everything else. And his father became completely, you know, by that time, the case was already over and devotees were imprisoned. But his own son became a devotee and his father was, you know, very unhappy with that situation. And he said, this is such an embarrassment for me. You know, I put these people to prison. Now you took it up. What do I do now? And he said, you know, best thing is that, you know, and he realized that his son is not going to leave it so easily. And then he said, you know, best thing, I'll give you some money. He was a very rich man. I give you some money. You go away from here. Make sure that no one sees you. Make sure you don't embarrass me. Just buy yourself some house and live there. I don't want to see you. Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Shri Shri Radha Gopalananda, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. So, and he gave him quite a large amount of money. And the son took it very happily. And he went and right at the outskirts of the city, he purchased a property which became the first devotee farm in the country. And he also purchased two vehicles, which became Sankirtan cars. So as a result, that high court judge, he sponsored devotees preaching, which became very successful. And so we can see. And then after a while he said, yeah, I actually changed my mind. I think that Hare Krishnas are good people. So we can see how, and these are not just isolated instances. There are many, many cases like that. And, you know, even envious, inimical people. I mean, there are many, many cases how, for example, one member of the family joins the movement and then parents or other relatives, they protest and they criticize devotees, but after some time you see them also chanting and taking up to Krishna consciousness. So these are the modern proofs how purifying this method is. And anyone who comes in touch with Krishna is changing. And in fact, we can see the modern pastimes of Mahaprabhu happening right in front of our eyes. Even the worst enemies of Krishna, those who are very jealous of Krishna and the devotees, they're helping us to become popular. They're helping to spread Krishna's glories far and wide. For example, I'm sure all of you know about the last two attempts by Russian Orthodox Church together with the KGB. You know, they teamed up for this Herculean task of, you know, putting a ban on Hare Krishna movement in Russia. They realized that it would not be easy because in communist times, you know, KGB tried and failed. So now they teamed up and they tried so hard, right? And at the end, I mean, in the process, I was actually so happy that it is happening because, you know, well, it costed us little money, relatively. But we would never have such a promotion worldwide, you know. Well, we could, but it would cost us millions and millions of pounds, you know, to advertise Krishna consciousness so much, because this is Kali Yuga. Everyone is interested in controversy. Everyone is interested in conflict. Everyone immediately pays attention. And, you know, there was such a publicity for the movement. And I was telling the devotees, you know, this man who actually initiated the whole thing, his name is Alexander Dvorkin. And I told the devotees, you know, we should give him a special prize for popularizing Bhagavad Gita all over the world. Because, you know, his input into preaching, you know, cannot be overestimated. The whole world was speaking about Srila Prabhupada and Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna, of course. And of course, all the newspapers, they were playing with the fact that, you know, the home, what's that? Foreign Minister of India, his name was also Krishna. And all the Russian, you know, newspapers were full of titles, Krishna defends Bhagavad Gita. So it was such a fun. It was amazing. And of course, Bhagavad Gita sales increased like anything. And this was also happening during Prabhupada's marathon. What a coincidence, quote unquote. And so, and of course they had a second go, and then, you know, all the leading scientists of Russia spoke against, and then actually, because I'm also coordinating a project which is meant to bring together different spiritual communities and work together with government officials and devotees, Spiritual United Nations. We also have representation in UN headquarters in New York. And our representative, we requested her to also make an input, you know, write something against the court case. And she actually wrote a letter addressed to the Russian government. And the letter was on UN you know, with UN heading. And when they received the UN letter, they said, okay, that's enough is enough. We don't want to mess with these Hare Krishnas anymore. The matter came up to the UN attention. And so they actually called the court, and they said, you know, just close this case. It goes too much. But I was thinking, you know, if they will still persist, we could make a next step and then get, leaders of different countries, presidents of different countries, and we actually have contacts to write to Russia about Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, which would be also a good thing to do. But anyway, they gave up. But some people were questioning them. Were you guys really against Hare Krishnas, or were you paid by Hare Krishnas to promote them? And they were like saying, "Who? We know. We are honest. We really wanted to, you know, kind of go against them, but it didn't work for some reason." So we can see that this is such a powerful preaching. And it was so exciting to see the development, especially like the reaction of Indian Parliament, how the one of the Parliament members, he was so offended and he started shouting in the microphone. He took the microphone and he started shouting, "Oh, they want to attack our Krishna. We will get at them." Like that. And so agitated everyone. So the whole work of Parliament was disrupted for a day or two, something like that, just because of that case. And so we can see that one way or the other, whether by preaching of devotees or by opposition from those who are envious and inimical towards Krishna, Krishna becomes more and more glorified. And so we're living in such a glorious times. Actually, nowadays, I can see that outside people sometimes do more work to promote Krishna than even devotees. Yeah. There were times when devotees were very actively pushing Krishna consciousness forward. They were trying to introduce Krishna to the world. But now other people took up the task. And oftentimes they do even more than devotees. But anyway, we can see that Lord Chaitanya's plan is executed in so many different ways. Traveling around the world, I have the opportunity to witness many amazing things in terms of development of Krishna consciousness. For example, Srila Prabhupada was very critical about, you know, different pseudo-religious groups. But these pseudo-religious groups are very prominent, of course. And many people follow those because they don't have high standards. They don't require to follow any principles. And so in Japan, I came to know about one of them, which is called Happy Science. And the founder of this group, this is really amazing case. You know, sometimes people claim to be gods or prophets, but this guy really exceeded everybody. He claims to be reincarnation of Buddha, Jesus Christ, and Muhammad put together. He says, "That was me. I came as Buddha, I came as Jesus Christ, I came as Muhammad." And so he doesn't even have, like some of these guys, at least they have some mystic powers. At least they can show some tricks or something to convince people. He can't even do that. Just on the basis of this claim, unsupported by anything, people follow him like mad. I mean, just to give an example, well, they originate from Japan. And so in Japan, in Tokyo alone, they have 600 temples. And 7,000 temples in Japan and 10,000 temples worldwide. So that's a massive movement. And millions of people are following that. But it's very interesting that this man, he says, oh, we transcended all these world religions. We transcended Buddhism, we transcended Christianity, we transcended Islam. But when he talks about Hinduism, he's very respectful. And when he speaks about Krishna, you know, he doesn't know much, but he says that Krishna is the god of love. And the main thing we're missing in our life is love. Right? And so, indirectly, he is appreciating Krishna and he's glorifying Krishna. And as a result, his followers, they're very respectful towards devotees. And they come to the temples. And actually, when I was in Japan, we were invited by one of the presidents of one of the temples. We came there, we did a massive kirtan, and we distributed prasadam. They were very happy. And as a result, they came back, they visited the temple. And so the relationship, you know, devotees are cultivating them, helping them to understand more. They are interested to know more about Krishna. So we can see that even through the so-called spiritual movements, Lord Chaitanya is executing his plan, preparing people to learn more about Krishna. Because at least they are requiring people to, you know, become a little bit better than they used to be, etc. And there were so many other things. I mean, I could talk for hours about different amazing things happening all over the world in terms of development of Krishna consciousness. But I don't want to go over time. And so if anyone has, the main idea is to promote Krishna and become very serious ourselves about making Krishna the center of our life and giving Krishna to other people. Because that's, if we just do that, Krishna will take care of everything else. And one point Sahadev mentioned, if you give anything to Krishna, the returns will be unlimited. Because Krishna is the most grateful personality of all. And as mentioned, he never forgets even the little favor done for him by anyone. So therefore, we are very lucky. And the main thing is to take full advantage of our good luck and share that good fortune with other people.